Welcome to a Friday morning in the great city of Atlanta. My name is Steak. It's the Steakhouse, the fastest 2 hours in radio. You know the queen of Atlanta radio. And the gentleman who's with us is sitting here going, are you guys actually still doing this? My God. John Gordon is here. He'll be sitting in co-hosting for the next 2 hours. Best-selling author, motivational speaker, leadership guru, Mr. John Gordon. Good morning to you, sir. Great to have you.
Great to be here with you. So great to see you again. It's awesome.
I know. It's been a long time,
right?
You
look good.
Yeah, I appreciate it, buddy.
You both look great. You really do.
Well, we're still fighting the fight, right?
Good fight.
Not that we can't learn a lot from a lot of folks, but John, I've known, when you were running Park Bench back in the late 90s, is that what it was?
94, 95, 96, right before the Olympics, I bought the Park Bench.
Yeah, so we'll tell John's entire story, and he's written multiple best-selling books. He has worked with countless NFL teams, college teams, probably your favorite teams out there, everybody from Dabo Sweeney to Georgia, Nebraska, all that. But the NFL work has been unbelievable. Mike Smith and him wrote numerous books together. He's got a great story of family and leadership. And we're in no hurry, so you're going to do our show with us. You know, we may test your sports knowledge a little bit. I mean, you better have an opinion. I tell people all the time, they used to interview for jobs. I said, we're in the opinion business, right?
I love it. I'm fired up to share my opinion.
Don't be shy. And I'll give you one shout-out right at the beginning of the show. Congratulations to Cornell Lacrosse, right? You played at Cornell?
I played at Cornell 48 years from the last championship until now. So we finally won the national championship. It was incredible.
How
I was there.
Awesome. I know. I saw.
Saw with my old teammates.
And I say that because lacrosse is huge in Atlanta now, which when you were here, it was not. That's one of the better national titles to win a national title in lacrosse for Cornell. So talking about the sports world, full circle. Congrats on that. I know.
Thank you. It was special.
You and alum must have been excited. Miss Sandra, how are you?
I'm awesome. I'm very excited for John. I told him I feel like I've been stalking him for months to get this done. But
for years even we've been talking about getting him in.
And I'm a big fan. I met you 100 years ago as well at Park Bench. It was 97 or 98. But when the Energy Bus landed, which was his first big Mac Daddy book, it was one of those things where you pick it up again and read it. So since then, I've got The Carpenter right beside my bed. This newest one, The Seven Commitments, a great team. I told him I read it in an hour. It's that good. And so I can't say enough and recommend and just leadership. And then I hear you say, yeah, I talked to Raheem. And it's just, we're thrilled to have you. So I think everybody, I said on Twitter, y'all are going to want to run through a wall after you hear John.
Let's go. And you know what's wild? The story of how the book came about.
Okay.
And why it took off is directly tied to Atlanta and Mike Smith.
Well, Mike Smith.
The first one or this one?
The Energy Bus.
The Energy Bus.
My whole career.
I was going to say that was the moment.
That book changed my life. So my whole career as a writer, as a speaker, everything I'm doing now literally tied to Atlanta and Mike Smith. Can't wait to share that story because when you hear that story, there's no explanation other than good fortune, fate, destiny.
Serendipity, all those things. Yeah, I'd written in my notes as one of the things to say, I would assume that the Energy Bus changed your life, and indeed you just said that. So we'll talk about how it comes to be that a guy that's running a saloon in Buckhead, I was going to say you need to, how long were you trying to get him? A while, right?
Oh, my goodness.
I mean, I bankrolled this guy for 18 months. I mean, the amount of shots I bought at the Park Bench probably paid for his house in Point of Vedra.
Though my kids' diapers, for sure.
That's true.
No question. We're going to do a little bit at 9 at 9.
It's good news, but we can roll through a quick 9 at 9, John. Bear with us. We're dealing with these Braves, as I'm sure you've seen. The A's walked it off in 11 innings and beat the Braves last night 5-4, y'all. The Braves have lost 11 of 14. They have not won a series since when the Mets were here mid-June. I mean, it is bad and it is worse.
Yeah, I just the storyline of the Braves is nobody can overcome what they've had to overcome. I mean, that's the first thing, right? So when you have your frontline pitching get decimated in the way they have, when you had your big move in the offseason, miss 80 games, and then when you have guys that are having career worst seasons, this is just what we are going to have to settle into, right? It doesn't mean that We're not rooting. Bo, you stayed up last night, I assume. Wasn't it pretty exciting?
Oh, last
game?
Night was an easy one. It's the 9 o'clock first pitch.
Oh, yeah, right. That's right.
Yeah, we were done by midnight.
You know, and an exciting.
They walked it off, you know, on us about midnight.
Exciting game. Down 3-0.
First inning.
Yeah. Then tie it at 3, back and forth, 4-4.
Take the lead. Yeah. Give up the lead.
You know, we always talk about, and Snit always talks about, you have to win series. If you just keep winning 2 out of 3, it's the Bobby Cox mindset, right? Just keep winning 2 out of 3, 2 out of 3, and you look up and you're 15 games over 500. Well, the reality was that this team, they don't win series. They don't win the third game of when you're 1-1 in the series. We thought they were going to go and run with the Mets. It's been the opposite since then. And it is going to be 2 months, Sandra, of...
getting ready for football.
Well, yeah. No, but really projecting how they're going to rework this team and what's going to happen.
Yeah.
And, because it, to a degree, this run is over. And listen, you go to St. Louis. It's a great ballpark. Everybody knows the baseball fans of St. Louis. Be very entertaining to watch them. But the All-Star break cannot come sooner.
You're not kidding.
For most of those guys, when I say most, I mean Michael Harris and Ozzie Albies and some of these
and
other
Braves
guys.
And Braves fans, like, it's exhausting. I will remind you, the fun starts tonight in St. Louis, 8:15, Grant Holmes. Saturday and Sunday are both 2:15 starts. Carl Dukes will pitch Saturday, I guess. And it looks like Randy McMichael will go on Sunday because it says undecided. And they have a good chance as going
okay,
as anybody.
I was going to say, Carl Dukes got his stuff,
he's good. I will remind you, though, y'all, when we get back, they don't start to play till Friday. And the Yankees are here for 3 if you just want to go to Truist and have a good old time. Sad news coming out of Atlanta United. Our friend of show, Garth Lagerwey, steps away with a cancer diagnosis. We don't know the details, but certainly praying for him to be okay. Atlanta United is at Toronto on Saturday. Our Atlanta Dream is playing Caitlin Clark in Indiana tonight. That's at 7:30. And the hype, Stake, did you peek at Cooper Flag and Ronnie last night?
I saw that it was on.
John, when he says things like "sar," he means saw. It's S-A-W.
Well, went to school with Boston guys, right?
He doesn't sound like
I'm from New York.
Yeah. I saw. I saw it was on just about every bar I was at.
Yeah.
Do you have numbers on that? Because I did not watch it. I was home
watching. Well, Cooper Flag, his line is 10.6 rebounds, 4 assists. His first bucket was a sick little tomahawk dunk. But if you peel back the layers, he was 5 of 21. For 0 for 5 for 3. He missed a lot. He turned over the ball a lot.
Do you remember?
They commented on they thought he was nervous.
Yeah, well, first of all, I listened to a guy talk about Dallas Sports Talk Radio. That game in Dallas was like being circled like every as if it meant anything at all. Victor Wembanyama, his first summer league game, I think he was 1 for 15 and was like 0 for 8 from 3. So, Cooper Flagg's a big shining star, and that game doesn't mean anything other than the most expensive ticket since Wembanyama his debut summer league as well.
Tonight, by the way, the Hawks begin their summer league play. That's at 4:30 against the Heat.
I know some people going out there. It's going to be a fun weekend.
So I didn't realize it was only 5 games, the summer league championship.
It's a quick jaunt. Okay. It's a good way to entertain your big clients. And our buddy Salsa is going to be out there.
Ace Newell, so that's his big premiere tonight.
And I think they're making Kobe Bufkin play as well, third-year player.
That was a USA Today players that need to prove themselves in summer. It literally said prove themselves. And I was like, let me just deep dive on
normally
Kobe.
Normally third-year guys don't play. They're like, that's adorable. Enjoy Las Vegas.
Go ahead. Do you see the score?
But dude, this is, I don't know if you're a tennis guy, John. This is a crazy good match. Taylor Fritz and Alcaraz right now.
I've been watching. It's awesome.
Alcaraz is up 5-4 in first set.
How good has Wimbledon been?
It's been great. I love it. And Djokovic, I just love watching Djokovic still play at 38.
Well, if you want to talk about a guy that has written books, and John Gordon's with us, he's a best-selling author and a friend of the show. The joke of, I'm sure you've studied some of, yes, it's great to have 15 people looking at every part of your body, literally, and everything you put in your body and everything else. But you talk about discipline and you talk about focus. At this stage of his career, what do you take when you watch and hear the way he approaches his game and his life?
It's his mindset. It's his belief. That's always been his greatest strength, is his mental toughness. And then you see it play out even now because his body gets tired. He probably feels old at times, but he's got to power through that. And you only do that through your mind and your mission.
And so I want to say that I believe if you heard a recent interview with Djokovic and his bitterness is too strong. But the fact that he was never loved like Federer and never loved like Nadal, and he started talking about like how difficult it's been over the years, there's no question that has been driving him, right? The fact he's never been the number one guy sometimes, or like, you know, I don't know, maybe overcoming whatever fans wanted or didn't want from him.
There's always an element of that will drive you to be great, but there has to be a greater force, a greater power, and it's love. Like people say Michael Jordan was driven by the desire not to lose or hating to lose, but actually he loved to battle and loved to compete, and that's what made him so great. He loved the battle, and I think Djokovic, at the end of the day, loves tennis, loves to play, and wants to be the greatest of all time. And I believe, opinion-wise, he is the greatest of all time.
Even right now.
Even right, he's the greatest
tennis player of all time.
Of all time.
Are those one, two, three, those three guys, Federer, Nadal, and Djokovic?
Yeah, and I think Federer is number two, Nadal is number three. But if you look at Djokovic head-to-head against Nadal and Federer in his prime, he was the best.
Well, what's also amazing is having all three of those guys, the toughest mindsets in tennis probably ever, all playing in the same era, right?
Greatest tennis era of all time. And these guys made each other better. That's the big thing about rivals, right? You need a rival in order to grow. You need adversity in order to get better. And those rivals that they had against each other made each one of them better.
Yeah, drove off.
I thought he came off really sweet, though, in the Roger Federer documentary. I was kind of surprised that he was even in Among the Fun.
That was a great...
He was emotional.
That was... I forgot about that doc. Did you ever see that one?
I have not
you
seen that one.
See
you'll love it.
The Access... It's a Federer documentary about his last year on the tour, and their last match ever against each other, and... then behind the scenes in the clubhouse, those three guys, the tears and the emotion, that's a great call. There's something we're going to tell you to watch. You're going to tell us what to read. We're going to tell you what to watch. Watch the Federer documentary. John Gordon is here. How did a kid who came down to Atlanta and was running the hottest bar in Buckhead become a speaker that is speaking all over the world? Weren't you at some world conference where you were speaking at? What's that? What was that event?
World Leadership Conference.
Oh, you know, just that World Leadership Conference. You know, I'm like having lunch at Goldberg's with a couple of buddies, giving them advice. This guy's at like
same
a World
totally
Leaders Conference. You know. Similar,
solving
right?
world problems.
Yes, we'll talk to John about his journey, and lots more on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. /9:24 on a Friday morning. My name is Steak. That's Sandra. The steakhouse sign is lit. The tables are ready. And it's if ever there was a day to say, why are we going to talk about sports? That sports stuff gets so old, Sandra. You know what I'm saying?
Silly
I mean,
sports.
My God. John Gordon is here. I think many, many of you have heard of him, have read his books, are familiar, maybe saw his speeches. And then there's tons of folks that have no idea what this dude's doing in here, and we're going to explain it to you over the course of the next few hours. And he's tied to the sports world in a million ways. But let's go back to your journey through Atlanta and the difference of being a proprietor of a bar to your life turning out where it is. Congratulations and all that. You look fabulous. You look healthy, and you look like you bring that mindset every day. Take folks through it a little bit, how it all evolved.
Well, first, I'm still athletic. I still compete. Pickleball is my game of choice now. You should know that.
No, I'm playing a bunch of it. Yeah, no
I love course. It. Played Tim Tebow the other day in singles.
For real?
For real. 90 degrees.
And you hung with him?
Oh, hung with him. 90 degrees, hot in Florida.
Does he live in Ponte Vedra?
He lives in Jacksonville, right? 10 minutes away from
dude,
me.
You're playing at a high level.
Yeah, so we are competing, going at it. He's 37, I'm 54, but I am hanging with him. And
you're playing singles.
And I won the third game.
Oh!
He won the first two, I won the third.
So, you know who's a sick pickleball player? Danny Werfel. Plays local. Have you heard about him?
I heard Danny's good. I heard Danny's really
good. I saw
good.
Him the other I saw him the other day playing doubles, and I was like, first of all, the dude is jacked, right? And you talk about a wonderful human being, right? The ministry that he's worked on his whole life. And
great guy.
And he, dude, that's what a professional athlete looks like on a pickleball court that's in shape. I'm like, oh, all due respect to the JCC where I get in some ferocious games. Different level.
Try looking at Tim Tebow across
Dude,
from you.
Dude, that's crazy.
I lobbed him. He jumped so high. I cannot believe he jumped that high and then was able to slam it down.
So with all your traveling and everything else, how'd that happen? How did you just, you know, get that good that you could play?
I just, whenever I'm on the road, I'm trying to play.
Find a game?
Out in L.A., Billy Bush. I play with Billy out in L.A. He has a court in his backyard. So we'll just battle it there.
Yeah.
And then I play a bunch of guys in New York. When I go up to New York, there's a great group of guys. Frank Catalanato played baseball for years.
Okay.
He has a court. I go play with Frank and his friends. So there's everywhere I am, I try to find games.
Yeah. It's the easiest sport to find a game more than pick up basketball or tennis or anything else. Anyways, take us through how mid-90s, Olympics are here. You're running park bench. I'm not saying you didn't have, you know, you had a meaningful, a fulfilling life to a degree, but clearly there was something missing,
yeah,
right?
I was 24 years old, and I was able to buy park bench with some investors because I was bartending at a place called Bar right next door.
Oh, yeah, of course.
And I was talking to Richard Beasley, who owned the place next door. I said, hey, Richard, would you ever sell your place? And he said, everything's for sale. So I got some investors together. My grandmother left me $30,000 when she died. I did not come from money. Very blue-collar family. My dad was a New York City police officer, undercover narcotics. He was shot a few times. He wasn't very positive,
oh, wow.
My dad.
Oh, dear.
Yeah, loving guy. Very loving guy, but one of those negative guys on the planet. So I grew up with this New York City dad.
The Edge New York City cop, right?
Yeah. You know, when I became a speaker, he said, I can't believe people actually pay you to speak. He goes, when you were a kid, we paid you to shut up.
Oh, wow. That's almost too cliche.
Oh, it's true. He said that to me. And so I had this opportunity after Rich and I talked to buy it. So bought it and turned it into Park Bench. So now it's going well. I'm 24. I'm owning this place, bartending, started the Phoenix organization, raised money for youth-focused charities, and started to meet all these young professionals that were coming in, began all these great friendships, and the place took off and had some success. But
and by the way, let me just mention, those who aren't familiar, if you're younger, this is the absolute heyday of Buckhead. This is when everybody in the country, and Park Bench was probably, out of 45 bars, the epicenter of what was going on in Buckhead, just to give people some perspective.
Yeah, it was so great being there. Like, it was so young. It was so innocent. Everyone was just hanging out, having a great time. Steak would be there. We would just be talking on the side.
Yeah, the pizza. Yeah, the slices on the other
slices
side,
slices of pizza. So it was a really great time. And met my wife, actually. She was walking down the street coming towards Park Bend. She wasn't coming in. And I grabbed her and brought her in. And she actually blew me off. That's a whole other story. Eventually, she would agree to go out with me. But met her literally on that corner. So many things happened on that corner of my life. And eventually the restaurant did really well. Park Bench did really well. We bought a few other places. Those did not do so well. And then I went to go work for a .com. Thought I was going to make my fortune. And so now I'm putting together this deal of this .com that, again, during that time, it was the heyday here in Atlanta of this .com. WebMD took off and all these other companies were taken off, and went to go work for this company. I had 100,000 shares. And then lost my job during the .com crash. And we had just moved to Jacksonville at that time from Atlanta because my wife wanted to move to the beach. So now I don't know how I'm going to pay the bills. How am I going to support my family? And I am being so negative that I'm actually negative to my wife. And she had enough of my negativity. She said, if you don't change, we're over. And that was a defining moment in my life. Like, she's like, you have to change.
Right.
You can't be this way. Because I was like this positive up-and-comer in Atlanta. Everything was going great. And then now everything crumbled. Everything fell apart.
You got screwed.
My partner,
it's everybody else's fault probably on some level. Or
my partners at Park Bench, they were not being so great. And let's just put it that way. And so we're not showing me the books and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
So from that moment on, we split. They bought me out for very little amount.
Uh-huh.
Took it and just said, I just left. I said, that's it. I'm done. And so now I had no Park Bench. Lose my job. And now I don't know how I'm going to pay the bills. I mean, I was
literally
like, we are almost bankrupt. And we just bought this house in Jacksonville and everything just came crumbling down. Lost a job at that .com. And so now I have to figure out, what am I here to do? What am I born to? I remember like literally on my hands and knees going, why am I here? And that is when writing and speaking came to me in that moment. I never thought I would be a writer and speaker. And literally writing and speaking came to me. I said, okay, I'm going to write and speak.
But what was it that made you believe that you could even do that? What, I mean, now granted, a Cornell education, you're not, you know, some fly-by-night, you know, guy that doesn't have a clue, right? And I'm sure there, would you study at Cornell?
Government economics.
Okay, of course.
You have a very strong faith, though.
A seamless fit.
Not then.
Not
then. Had no faith then.
Okay.
What made me think I could do it was I had the Phoenix organization, and we were this group of young people, and I had these events, and people would come to these events, and I would speak at these events. We had monthly meetings, and I would speak then. And I ran for city council of Atlanta when I was 26, going door-to-door to 7,000 houses. So I spoke then, too. And I thought back to, when was I most energized? What did I love to do? And it was the Phoenix. It was here in Atlanta. It was bringing people together. It was being on a mission, doing something positive. What could I do as a living? Like, where can you do that as a living? And writing and speaking came to me in that moment. I said, okay, who inspired me? Ken Blanchard, who wrote The One Minute Manager, and these various authors.
So you were consuming this type of stuff prior to a degree.
I had been inspired by several authors. Richard Bach, who wrote Jonathan Livingston Seagull and Illusions and other books, he inspired me. He made me want to write fables when I actually started writing fables.
So do you remember your first gig, the first, I assume unpaid, right?
I remember how I got, first, how can you just become a writer and speaker all of a sudden? How can you pay the bills with that? You can't. So I knew I had to get back in the restaurant business. So I became the first franchisee in Florida for Moe's Southwest Grill.
Okay.
I opened up the first Moe's Southwest Grill in Jacksonville.
Our buddy
Daryl
Dollinger and a bunch of guys.
Those guys.
Started.
Yeah, yep. Martin Sprock and those
Martin
guys.
Sprock, yep.
So it basically became the first franchisee. There was only five Moe's at the time in the country. And second mortgage my home, $20,000 in credit cards, and a wing and a prayer of opening this restaurant. We had no money in the bank when the restaurant opened. Like, if it doesn't make it, we broke even the first 3 or 4 weeks. I'm like, how am I going to feed my family besides Moe's? Like, they were eating at Moe's every single day.
Yeah. It's a lot of guacamole. A lot of guacamole in the Gordon House.
A lot of fajitas. We had no other food that they were eating. So it was a scary time. That was where my faith was born, because literally every day I was like, God, it was my Jerry Maguire moment. God, help me help you and show me the money. And on a wing and a prayer, somehow, some way, money just came flowing in. Eventually, I remember making our first profit. And I remember thinking, okay, this is about like 3 months later, thinking, okay, somehow, some way, I got to get this writing and speaking thing going. Woman sitting in my restaurant, I'm wiping her table down. I'm a young guy at the time, 29, 30 years old. So she thinks I'm just a guy who works there. I start talking to her. I said, no, I'm actually the owner here. I said, I'm also a motivational speaker.
Yeah.
I had not given one talk except in my mirror. And she said, well, you should come speak to my company. She was the managing partner of New York Life.
Wow.
And so I went and spoke to her company and even tried to get out of it my first talk because I was so scared. And she said, no, you agreed. My team is ready. You got to come. I did it. I talked about success is the little things, and also talked about energy vampires that made its way into the energy bus. Talked about that, and boom. That after that, I said, I think I can do this.
And that's a good jumping off point. The book was The Energy Bus.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of the most read, recognized motivational books of all time.
Millions of copies sold.
Millions and millions.
Still hits the bestseller list to this day.
Yeah. So from The Energy Bus, and Sandra and I have used the term energy vampire. You know, I've been lucky enough to own a few businesses, and I'm sure you've heard this from thousands of guys. That is the term we use. We got to get those guys out of the building. They're energy vampires. I always want to take credit for it, but it's actually coming from you, right? So, and also Mike Smith, the Falcons. How did Mike Smith and John Gordon hook up, and why are so many coaches from Sean McVay to Mac Brown utilizing, if you are in sales, if you're in leadership, if you're looking to be better at your church or your temple, I think there's a lot of stuff coming up that you will enjoy. It's John Gordon. It's Friday morning, Steak and Sandra on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. So 9:40 Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Steak Shapiro, Sandra Gordon, John Gordon, best-selling author, motivational speaker, and this Energy Bus book we're going to talk about in a second. What's going on in the tennis there, ma'am?
Alcaraz won the first set.
Okay.
And Taylor is up in the second set, 4-3. So.
Was that a line judge? Who were they just talking to there? Good gosh.
Yeah,
I don't know. Whoever she is, she's doing a great job. Anyway, she's the chair empire.
I don't know what
that's
means.
The best-looking chair empire I've ever seen. Looks like a Vogue model. My God. Anyway, I'm distracted. I apologize. Anyway, this is a month. I mean, listen, we're the number one tennis. You know that, John. Alta is the biggest tennis organization in America. So when we talk tennis, unlike probably other cities, people really care. And boy, when you talk about marketing, Sandy, for Wimbledon to get Taylor Fritz, who's left here? Alcaraz, Djokovic, and Sinner, right? Mm-hmm. Are the last four. They will do monster ratings for this. It's about as good as it can get. I don't know what's happening there right now. Looks like a hot day in London. We'll update you on that. There's not a lot of other stuff to update folks on, right? I mean, you got the All-Star game coming in.
It's the perfect day to have John here because I want to ask him a million questions about all these coaches that he's friends with. Raheem.
Yeah, he's going to give us some dirt. Give us some dirt.
And I want to talk about tennis. I love tennis. My son played at Clemson for 2 years.
Oh, wow.
And so
ACC?
ACC. We love tennis. Tennis family. Yeah. I didn't start playing until I was like 40, but I love tennis.
That's great.
So we left off. Let's talk about the book, The Energy Bus, and
how he got involved.
Yeah. How many years old is The Energy Bus right now?
Wrote it in 2006, came out in 2007.
All right, so it's almost 20 years old.
Almost 20 years old.
It changed your life.
Changed my life.
It's almost like before there were viral videos. This book somehow went viral, right?
I went on a 28-city tour, paid for myself from city to city. We had 5 people, 10 people in each city. The most people we had were 100 people in Des Moines, Iowa. They thought Jeff Gordon was coming. That's why they showed up. So I get back.
But just to explain to people, sorry, you're paying for the tour. This is the reality. Like, we talk about sports all the time. The reality is not the guy getting all the NIL money. It's the guy trying to scrape by and figure it out. So John's paying for his tour. Showing up, and there's 8 people at a Barnes & Noble.
8 people, 10 people at a coffee shop. We were calling up every single station. There was no social media, so we're calling up local radio shows, local TV shows. And we're like, hey, John Gordon's here. He's internationally known. Because the book actually became a huge hit in South Korea before the United States.
What? Okay.
It was a top 5 bestseller in Korea. And so, but the United States, no bookstores would carry it. So now I'm going around the country trying to get the books in the stores. So if I showed up at Barnes & Noble, they would actually put the books in the stores. So, but I'm going to different radio stations, TV stations. We got a few shows here and there, but it was not successful.
You're grinding your way.
I'm grinding. I get back and I get invited to speak at a little local event of like 10 realtors. One of those realtors was Mike Smith's realtor. And she says to Mike Smith, you need to have John Gordon come speak to the Jaguars. And Mike is the defensive coordinator of the Jaguars at the time. And Mike Smith says, who's John Gordon? And she says, he's a speaker. He goes, how is some real estate speaker going to help me and my Jaguars win? She goes, no, Mike, he's a motivational kind of guy. He'll help you win. Mike says, I don't know. I'll talk to Jack Del Rio about it. Jack Del Rio is the head coach. Next day, Mike is in the office. He's talking to Mike Ryan, who's the athletic trainer for the Jaguars. And he says, hey, do you know this John Gordon guy? And Mike Ryan says, yeah, he's a friend of mine. Here's his new book, and hands him The Energy Bus. He reads it, gives it to Jack Del Rio. Jack reads it, and Jack literally invites me to come speak to the team that year. And I said, you don't have to pay me. Just get everyone a copy of the book. He goes, I'll give it to the entire organization because I want everyone who interacts with my players to bring positive energy to the team, and we don't want energy vampires on this team. One person can't make a team, but one person could break a team. You know this. And so he wanted to build a stronger team. So I spoke that year. They have a great season. Mike Smith that gets hired by the Falcons, and he brings me to the Falcons the next year and says, I want to do the energy bus with the Falcons. Matt Ryan is a rookie quarterback that year. Mike Smith is a rookie coach. And that's when everything started taking off because people started hearing about the energy bus, my work with that team, because they went from 4-12 to 11-5. Jaguars went from 4-12 to 11-5. And then Texas was after that.
Give listeners, the good thing about it, we got plenty of time here and you're going to be here, but give listeners some idea of what a few minutes of the core messaging. You got a team in front of you. You were just introduced by the coach. Give us some taste of what that looks or sounds like as you get in front of a group.
When you first get up there, they're the hardest group to speak to, say an NFL team or even NBA players. They're tough. They're looking at you like, who is this guy?
Yeah.
What's his agenda? And I start out right away, elephant in the room. Guys, my agenda is to help you get better. That's why I'm here. It's not about me. I want to help you get better. And now I say, I've worked with this team, and this team, and they got better. And here's what happened. And there is a power of a positive team, or my newest book, The 7 Commitments of a Great Team. I don't want to talk about goals, guys, because goals will not take you to where you want to go. It's your commitments will. How many of you have written down your commitments for the season? No one's written them down. So then we start talking about the commitments that will make this team great. And there are 7 commitments to a great team. Or if I'm giving a talk on the power of a positive team, it's vision, it's mission, It's uniting together. It's connection, commitment. It's the relationships that you build. It's having that positive mindset. A lot of my work is on being positive and overcoming the negativity and the challenges and the adversity that every team will have to overcome in order to define themselves and their team success.
John, tell everybody, which is what I was curious about, if you're going to go speak to, we just mentioned Texas and Sark. Did they tell you, here's our issues inside this locker room. Here's what we want you to talk about?
The good news is now I know usually what their challenges are. And I'm actually giving them advice on what they need to hear and what we could do to help them get better. But I also am listening to the coach and go, okay, this is your situation. A new coach coming in, we're establishing the culture. We're building it. How about we talk about this? Sark brings me back the next year. All right, let's talk about this. Third year, let's talk about this to elevate them. The Rams, you know, working with Sean McVay. Ever since Sean McVay became the coach of the Rams, I started working with Sean and his teams, seeing what challenges they're facing. And that's the thing. I've been doing this so long now with so many teams that you see patterns. You see issues. You see what the problems are.
So talk to some of that. Give me tangible storytelling of, like, biggest star in the room is also the biggest jerk, or that there's little fiefdoms off to the side, or, like, what are the stories you can tell that can take apart a sales organization, a company, a team? You know, give me a little more detail.
Let's start with this. So a team must be connected at the top. If you're not connected at the top, you will crumble at the bottom. So you have to have alignment with the owner, the GM, and the coach. What happened with the Philadelphia Eagles that year with Chip Kelly is there was a division between Chip Kelly, Howie Roseman. As a result of that, once they started losing, different guys were going to Howie, others were going to Chip, and then the team just fell apart. So there's always a thing of disconnection that happens. What is it? Is it jealousy? Is it bitterness? Is it contracts? Is it one guy's sleeping with another guy's wife? I mean, that stuff happens. So when those happen on a team, you start to see that team fall apart. What is the coach doing on a daily basis to get that team united and connected? Mike Smith will tell you with the Falcons. Like, we wrote it in the book, you went in the locker room first. He sort of wasn't picking his guys. So now they're picking his guys, and the GM is picking his guys. And now he's got a team that he doesn't think is as good. And now they start to have some issues. He has a lot of injuries. They start to lose. Now he's trying to fix things and try to focus on things. He said, you know what? I got my eye off the ball a little bit. I should have focused more on the guys that I wanted. I should have stood up for that more. So he'll, like, bring that up.
So he'll talk about that Thomas is picking the players and the collaboration isn't at the level that he needs?
Where it was early on. And that's why when a coach will go to a team, initially that coach wants to be able to shop for their own groceries. That's why it's so important, because if you're telling me my job is based on their performance and you're picking them and I'm not, and yet I'm going to get fired if they don't do well and you're picking the wrong guys.
Well, then why is there a general manager? But you can't give the coaching it's a collaboration.
That's why you have to have a united front of collaboration.
So McVay and Les Snead is the best example.
And they have a great example of talk. You know, John Schneider is a good friend of mine with the Seahawks. And Schneids, and now with Pete Carroll, for years they had great collaboration. And now Mike McDonald, who I know really well and talk to Mike a lot. So you have Mike and him now working together. It's collaboration. It's connection. It's a commitment together. It's alignment. And once you start losing that, you lose the team. Now you see the same thing on the team. You have a quarterback. If your quarterback is not a leader so often, that's an issue. When I go walk and speak to a team, I'm walking in the room. Where's that quarterback sitting? Matt Ryan always sat in the front row, always took notes every single year till the end, and then always came up to me and said, hey, here's the one thing that I took away from your talk today. And then I go to other rooms, and I see that quarterback, and he's not in the front row.
And you see body language,
And you see body language. And I'm like, that guy is not a leader. They're going to have issues with that guy.
And will you tell that to the coach?
Yes.
Say, I noticed that this guy, because he's the alpha male. The NFL quarterback is the number one alpha male in sports. Right? No question, right? It all runs through him. They're billion-dollar organizations that are basically
I would say in college as well. I would say that quarterback position at probably any level.
Right.
Oh, yeah. I go to Oklahoma City. Billy Donovan is there. I'm watching practice, and I'm now meeting with the coaches, and I said, hey, I could see things that a lot of times I don't think others see, but for some reason all these years I see patterns and I see things. And one of the assistant coaches is like, yeah, right. He goes, what did you see with us? I told him, I said, that guy over there probably has a contract issue. He's not united and connected with the team. There's a challenge there. And Billy goes, I didn't tell him. I saw it. It was so clear. It was Ibaka. there was definitely an issue going on in somehow, some way with that team and with the relationships that were going on. And you could just see body language.
Right. Which is a huge part of it, right?
Huge part of it.
That permeates into an organization. You know, anytime you speak, you can see who's connected to you and who's like, when is this guy going to get off? I'm sure. And then your challenge is to turn that guy around, inspire that guy, or realize there's nothing's going to get through and let the coach know that.
Right. And you can't even focus on that guy. You've got to focus on just bringing your message, because at first they're all skeptical. So it's over time turning them around. Let me give you an example. I go to speak to the Commanders last year right before the playoffs. I walk into that room. You see openness. You see energy. They're now receptive. They don't even know me, but they're receptive to the message. That tells me, okay, this coach has built a culture of great guys who are ready to learn and grow and get better. And you just see
and
that.
Jaden's right up front, the Mac Daddy.
He sat right up front.
There you go.
Right up front and humble, great leader. And who else? They got Bobby Wagner. They got Ertz on that team. They had Marcus Mariota. All these guys that I met throughout the years, the teams I've spoken to, they were my favorite guy in the room, and now they're on one team. That's why they had a great year. They had a great culture, great locker room.
So I want to say a great leader, and you could talk about, you know, has humility, has openness, he's more Dan Quinn-esque, Sean McVay-esque. We had a guy in Atlanta, the worst situation I've ever seen in sports, Bobby Petrino.
I knew you were going to say that.
Who, Algie Crumpler will tell you a story that he was a 8-time Falcon, Pro Bowler. He's in the summertime. He comes to be able to see Coach, Secretary for – no, he won't see you. Nope. Doesn't know why you're here. If you're in the hallway, he will not say hello to you. Eyes down. Do not speak to him. To me, I was just blown away that you could even think you could hire a guy from college, bring him in, and, you know, professional. But that is the ultimate sign of – ego, narcissism, lack of connection, all those things?
Best leaders love and accountability. The players got to know that you actually care about them and you love them. But then you're going to hold them accountable and make them better. Bobby Petrino had no love whatsoever. And yes, that is true. Guys would literally walk down the hallway and you were not even allowed to look at him and talk to him. It was one of their rules. Who is going to commit to a coach like that? Who's going to play hard for a coach like that? Why would he think that would be a winning formula? It blows my mind. I've worked with Dabo Swinney now for the past 13 years, and Dabo is off the charts. One of the best leaders I've ever worked with. I've worked with CEOs. I've worked with the best leaders on the planet in corporate America. Dabo would be an unbelievable CEO because he leads with so much love, but man, he's going to hold a fire to you.
I've said this for years, watching Kirby, knowing Kirby, seeing him address, know how he handles his kids. I said, there's not a corporation, I don't care how many billions of dollars, that Kirby Smart, now again, his parents are school teachers, he's incredibly well-read, yeah. The depth of his knowledge on things outside. I was like, dude, that guy is a CEO. And by the way, now with NIL and collectives and players, yes. Coach, I mean, the building itself, he's probably got 200 staff members just there.
Yep.
Then the P&L of a multi-billion dollar operation, right?
Yeah, you really are running now an organization. You're running a company. You're running an entire team. And you have to have great leadership and all the same principles. People always ask me, do the same principles apply to business and sports? Same exact principles. And Dabo and Kirby, Sean McVay, Kevin O'Connell, those guys are unbelievable leaders who would lead literally. I believe they could lead Delta.
So why is Bobby Petrino act that way? Is that fear? Is that just...
Am I allowed to curse?
No, he'll have to try. Because he's a blank hole?
Yes.
Is that what you're going to say?
Exactly.
Just because that's who you are sometimes. That's
right. I can't believe they hired him. I mean, that's what really makes me mad.
And when I spoke to one of the college teams where he was, I spoke to the entire college athletic department, he did not show up when I came to speak, which is not surprising.
Well...
I would put his face on the vampire in the front of the room, John.
Definitely.
Like that's in your new book.
I get that question all the time. What happens when my leader is an energy vampire?
How about leaving, lying on national TV, lying to your boss, and then leaving a note to guys you asked to go to war with? You stick a letter on their locker, and then you're in Arkansas this next night, and that's how you choose. That's just a human being. That is like... Are you a real man that you can't even get in front of them and say, I've made a decision? You just scurry out like a rat in the middle of the night?
That's a lack of integrity. Great leaders lead with integrity. And the word integrity comes from the word integer, which means whole and complete. Bobby Petrino has a lot of disconnection and division within himself, which then plays in how he sees and treats others.
Yeah, which is why he ended up on a motorcycle with somebody he wasn't supposed to be on, that right. wasn't his wife, and that almost got fatally injured. I mean, it's all flaws in character.
You mentioned the word narcissist earlier. That's the thing. A lot of leaders, unfortunately, are narcissists, and when you're a narcissist, you cannot be a great leader.
John Gordon's here. We got another hour to go. Sports Radio 929.
Law firm.
One call, that's all.
Go to com.
That's all can.com.
The Braves fell in extra innings last night against the A's to drop their fourth straight series. The Braves finish off their road trip with a three-game stop in St. Louis this weekend ahead of the All-Star festivities in Atlanta next week. And at Wimbledon, the women's final is set after American Amanda Anisimova beat the top-ranked Aryna Sabalenka in a stunning upset. The 13th-seeded American will face off against the number 8th-ranked Iga Swiatek in the final tomorrow. I'm Joe Patrick.
Hey, it's top of the hour, 10 o'clock. My name is Steak. That's Sandra. This is The Steakhouse. Thanks so much for being with us. The number one sports radio station in the Southeast, the highest ratings in Atlanta sports history. And John Gordon is here. John knew us when we had this little rinky-dink little signal called 790 The Zone back in the day. And you actually, somebody reminded me, a buddy of ours, Cody Hicks, reminded me, you spoke at 790 The Zone like 20 years ago, right? Hit that mic, I'm sorry.
One of my first talks, actually, was that. It was fun to come back and do that with you guys.
Yeah, speaking of dysfunctionality, he must have walked in that room and said, damn, who are the leaders in that? He looked at me and Andrew, and he goes, okay, now I get it, right?
Can I just say it's so cool seeing what you're doing now, what Andrew's doing? I mean, come on, you guys have, like, really risen up. Like, we were just kids,
yeah.
And now years later to see it, it's really fun to be back full circle.
Well, you're very sweet. We're Atlanta's a phenomenal city. The city of opportunity is how we describe Atlanta, right?
It was the best. And it still is. Like, you come here, you feel like I can create my world here. I can actually become something. The American dream, I think, happens in Atlanta.
I could not agree more. An entrepreneurial haven. Obviously, more African-American entrepreneurs than anywhere else, maybe in the world, right?
Yep. I love the culture here, too. And I love the ethnic diversity. And I've always loved that about Atlanta. What's so great about it?
So his new book is The Seven Commitments of a Great Team. How many books total have you written?
32 books now. Yes, what? This is my 32nd, this last one.
So how do you decide on your next piece? Is it come from everyday stuff? And you're like a songwriter that all of a sudden there's a moment you go, I got to write about that. I got my next gig. How does that process work for a guy to write that many books?
Some books come that way to me where it's just like, boom, it's a eureka moment. And I know this is the next book that I am writing and I'm going to impact the world with this book. Other books come to me where I'm like, I'm talking to a leader, I'm talking to a CEO, and I'm seeing the same problem over and over again. Like one of my recent books is Difficult Conversations Don't Have to Be Difficult. And I know, okay, I'm going to talk about that. I'm going to write a book to help people have difficult conversations.
Elaborate on that.
Well, we often don't have difficult conversations, the issues, the elephant in the room, because people do not want to have conflict. People don't want to rock the boat. And so we don't have the conversation. But if you don't have the conversation, then you can't get better. So we sweep things under the rug and we don't address them. So this teaches you how to have difficult conversations and improve your team because of those conversations.
So
let me interject there, John, because that you hit that in the book last night, and if anybody's listening, the elephant in the room, and they had lost a couple of games to a specific team, and you had them, the teammates write on a piece of paper on their back,
yep,
and say what they really are, like this is a safe place. And talk about that exercise, and the elephant in the room is a lot of stuff you kind of don't want to hear.
This is a true story, and this was inspired. This part in the book was inspired by Billy Donovan and the Florida Gators that year. That year, they had Patrick Young. They had a team that beats Kentucky 3 times, and yet not one guy was drafted in the NBA. They make it to the Final Four. They were going to therapy every week as a group. A few guys had some drug issues, which is public knowledge. Billy was going to therapy. Here's a Hall of Fame coach going to therapy with these two players every week, showing that he cares about them, helping them to get better. The therapist says, why don't we bring the entire team into this? So now they're doing therapy as a team. One of the guys, Patrick Young, thinks he's a great leader. But they do this exercise where on the back, you put a piece of paper and you write down on the back of every teammate one thing that's holding them back. And guys are writing on Patrick's back on the piece of paper, not a leader. And Patrick's like, what? Your attitude sucks, Patrick. What? He had no idea. So now they have these conversations, the elephant in the room. And as a result of those conversations, they get better and they become that team that actually beats Kentucky three times because they had those difficult conversations. Another great example is Nick Nurse, Toronto Raptors. They had some issues on that team the year they won the NBA championship. I can't say what they were, who the player was giving them a problem, but Nick said, you know what? I'm not letting this go on any longer. I'm going to deal with this right here, right now. And he gets the team together, and he has the conversation, calls out the player right to his face. Either I'm getting fired or you're changing, one or the other. We're not going on like this anymore. They have that conversation. They win the NBA championship. If they don't have the conversation, they do not win that year.
One of the original books ever written, I guess it was Winning by Jack Welch. Is that the one back in the day? It was the chairman of GE. And he said, radical candor, which is basically like the passive-aggressive in an office. Like, if you're not happy with your VP of sales, if you're not just say it. Be straight. Have the uncomfortable conversation, because that avoids you months of tiptoeing around. Boss hasn't talked to me lately. I could sense a vibe. I knew my first time I got fired that all of a sudden my PD, who used to critique my show all the time, he had heard from upper level, we're about to be sold to WSB, and we're probably going to get rid of everybody here. And it used to be like, there was such engagement. And I could just feel the pall that had set in and the family who had sold us out, right, down.
Yep.
Now, again, that kid, maybe you can't tell it, but you can feel that energy. Just be radical candor with your kids, with your co-host. We've been together 25 years, right? We've had conversations with partners. Like, dude, I'm worried about it. I'm seeing this. Let me just say what it is.
Yeah, be honest. Be truthful. That builds trust. If you don't have trust, you cannot have a great relationship, and you can't have a great team. So great coaches build trust. Great teams
build
trust.
Same with a spouse. Uncomfortable conversation, right?
Yeah, my wife and I have had many difficult conversations where she's told me how I need to improve as a dad or as a husband. And so those conversations make me better. No, she's always right.
And you probably had them with her.
One time she said, she goes, you need to be a better dad. I wanted to say, you need to be a better mom. And she said, listen to me. I said, okay. I didn't say anything. I said, okay, make me better. 3 hours later, she was done telling me what I could do to get better.
3 hours. Let me take out a list. Hang on a second here. Get it? Okay. Now, if you're asking me, here's what you do.
Oh, yeah.
PowerPoint.
What was an issue she said that was valid about you as a dad that took to heart?
I wasn't making enough time to be with the kids because I was trying to build our life, build our family, create success. But I was so consumed with success and business, I wasn't making time for those important times. So I started to read to the kids before bed. And we started to pray together as a family and with my kids. We still say that prayer to this day. That was a big thing. You don't have to do a lot, but just make those meaningful moments. That was key.
We've had a discussion, obviously, John, about Kirk Cousins this week and, you know, our love affair and hate affair and what's going on. So the book is The Seven Commitments, a great team. And you walk us through six until the end. And that was the biggest gut punch in the book because it's literally employees, teams do not feel value from above. And that is any building that you're in or even in your own household. And I felt like Kirk even saying for you, what you're doing, you drafted him. There was something that I felt like he doesn't feel valued in that room.
I have not been following the whole Kirk Cousins situation. I have to be honest there, but I love Kirk as a human being, mm-hmm. as a person. Everyone who knows him knows he's one of the greatest persons on earth. And you're right. Everyone wants to feel valued. They want to be respected and they want to be appreciated. And if you don't value your team, then none of the other commitments will work. So that's why it's the actual most important commitment there is to value each other.
Let me use the Don Draper line, which maybe is my favorite meme from Mad Men, which is one of the greatest scenes ever. His relationship, and I forget, you know, the girl that he's mentoring, and she's like, you don't ever say anything nice. You don't ever do this. And he goes, that's what the money is for. Do you remember this line?
Of course.
He screams at her. So I would argue, when the Atlanta Falcons pay a guaranteed contract of $1 million to set up Kirk Cousins once again for life, that you work for the Falcons. They have put you in a unique situation. Vikings weren't going to give you that money. It's guaranteed money. And the relationship started to turn the night they drafted Michael Penix at 8. They were blindsided. They went out to Washington. They watched Penix, and they said, we can't not take him. Like, we just can't. This is a generational player. That minute on, the relationship fractured. If you were in that, situation, I see the Falcons side of it. Just play good quarterback, Michael Penix Jr. Now you see in this QB documentary, he admits, I was hurt. I did not want to give up the reins to Michael Penix. I couldn't even throw the ball downfield. He gets intercepted by the Saints at the end. He throws four picks again. So that's a difficult situation because part of what the listeners are saying, get over it. That's what the money is for. That's what it's for. Sorry you got your feelings hurt.
We know that money doesn't always equate with value, though, because you can provide your wife with a great life, but if you don't come home and do that one little thing, you're a horrible husband. And that happens all the time. We equate and measure value differently with different things. So my wife will be like that. If I can actually take out the garbage and help her with this errand, and I actually take time to read something that she wrote she wants me to see, doing those little things makes a big difference. Just for your listeners, this is key for your relationships, by the way. Couples who actually make small sacrifices for each other, small sacrifices, 85% more likely to stay together. So that shows you it's not about the big thing.
What is that? What does a small sacrifice look like?
Small thing looks like, I just wrote this. Can you read this? And you take the time to stop what you're doing and do it. Or she calls you up and you're busy as anything. But you say, you know what? I'm going to take the time and hear you out and hear what you have to say. Or I need to go pick up the kids. I can't do it today. Can you do that? Even though you got a million things going on, right, and you go and do it. Small little sacrifices.
Put down your phone.
Putting down your phone when you're talking and having dinner. Small sacrifices. So going back to Kirk, he wants to be appreciated, and he's not seeing it as the money. He's seeing it as the respect for him being the starting quarterback.
By the way, I don't even know that that's true, but it hit me hard. And it hit me hard, John, because what people are going through at work, and especially post-COVID, I don't get paid enough and I'm not coming in. It's that yin and yang that we don't feel, I feel valued working where I do now. Yeah. I did not where I was before. That's a different animal to go into work every day. And whether you work at Chick-fil-A or whether you're John Gordon.
Two things here. You've got to build a culture if you're a leader where people feel valued. So it's the leader's job. It's the company's job, the organization's job to actually create value and let people know that they feel that value. That's your job. But also, it's your job coming to work every day to control what you control. You just said it best. Kirk, don't worry about the outside. Focus on inside. It's called inside out. Every team I work with, I teach inside out instead of outside in. So often we look at the press, the media, the expectations. I talk to a lot of quarterbacks. They're worried about their performance. They're worried about their contracts. They're worried about what people think. What I teach them is love the battle, love the competition. Love the moment. Just love competing. That's what got you here in the first place. You loved playing and competing and battling. You do that and focus on what you control. The outcome will take care of itself, inside out.
I've been around I've been 20, 30 coaches, GMs, 40, 50. The ones that literally are like, dude, I don't have time to worry about what Steak Shapiro said in the morning, what Mark Bradley wrote in the HAC, what D said. Like, dude, I got one of the busiest jobs in the world. That's a distraction. Joe Torre once said about the New York Post, I don't read the Post because if the Yankees are going great, I'm going to be convinced I'm the best manager of all time. If we're going lousy, I'm going to start questioning everything I do. The great lead, they don't even listen to that nonsense. You know, do they know that stuff's circulating? Of course, you're in professional sports.
They hear it, but they don't listen.
Or they don't let it affect their – that's part of the – I've told so many coaches and GMs, dude, that's just – you're going to get fired. The only guys who don't get – like, you're in the job for a finite amount of time. Like, don't worry about the – or they're trying to control us because maybe that's going to help me survive this gig, right?
Yeah.
I need better chatter on sports talk. I need writers to say nicer things.
Don't let praise go to your head. Don't let critics in your head.
All right. It's a good one, right? And that's what Joe Torre was saying, right?
Yeah.
When he said that.
It's just a simple adage that works, that makes you better. And again, if you worry about what the fans think, you'll be sitting with them.
And your quote in here is care, not carry.
Right. Go out there and carry, but don't carry the burden.
Yeah.
Kirk, don't carry the burden or the expectation. You just play quarterback. And if you focus on being a great quarterback, when I went to Texas, Colt McCoy, senior year, Heisman Trophy candidate, really nervous, dealing with some mental stuff. Worried about the outside. I said, just focus on playing quarterback. What do you do? Take the snap. Then what? Make the read, passing it, or hand it off. That's all you do. It's that simple. He goes, yeah, just play quarterback. Yep. Golfers, just play the course. It doesn't matter who's watching. Just play the course.
John Gordon with us. Lots more to get to. When we come back, also, the notion of just wake up in a good mood, like easy to say. What does that even mean? How do you change the perspective? We'll do that. And, of course, more dirt on more coaches. And I say dirt, more inside stuff. He's been with countless teams. He's a best-selling author, John Gordon, live in studio, Sports Radio, 929 The Game. .1024, Sports Radio, 92.9 The Game. If you're just joining us, John Gordon's here. He's a best-selling author. His newest book is The Seven Commitments of a Great Team. And he's written countless books. And what's the coolest, not the biggest, but that'd be cool also, speaking gig that you've had? I know all these teams we talked about, but have there been a few places you're like, wow, like, how did I end up here? Or certain companies that were, you know, more exciting than other, or like, give us some taste of that.
Years ago, I spoke to Southwest Airlines, and that was a lot of fun doing that. Working with Zapata Jewelry was like 5,000 women, and Avon, again, 6,000 women. Those are always fun events because women crowds are just fun. They are laughing. They love your material.
They're less cynical sometimes.
Less cynical, big time, and just also just they got great energy. So that's always a lot of fun too.
Yeah. So
hey, All Four Seasons Garage and Entry Doors, thank you so much for sponsoring our tailgate, and also the 10 o'clock hours brought to you by WiseGuysProWash.com. Mention me, get $70 off any service.
The teams that you work with, and there's a ton of them, but there's a guy. Local guy here, won a state title at Marist, Sean McVay, right? Mm. Dad, one of the classic general managers in television history, ran WSB for years. Grandfather, we all know about him. I mean, Sean McVay seems to be, to me, one of the most dynamic, genuine leaders, not to mention a savant in terms of football. So how much time have you spent with him, and what do you know about him that we don't?
I spent a lot of time with Sean. And I absolutely love Sean. Met Sean when he was 30 years old and got the job with the Rams. And I talked to Les Snead, and they said, we met this young guy, and we interviewed him. And we're like, how can we hire this 30-year-old young guy? And they're like, how can we not hire this guy? And when I met him first time, Fairmont Hotel, 6 hours, and we are sitting there talking about culture and leadership and team building. And we literally mapped out in that meeting. This is what I do. Sit down. I did it with Sark as well. And we sit down and we go over, what kind of culture do you want to build? What are your core values? Here's how you decide what your core values are. What are you looking for in the players you want to bring into your program and on your team? Those characteristics actually become the core values that you want to build your program around. Sean created We Not Me as a big part of that, middle of his pyramid. He created a pyramid that looked like John Wooden's pyramid. And so we began working from that time on. I spoke to his team, and then through his ups and downs, and what I do know, again, I can't say too much because I never want to betray confidence, but what Sean has said publicly, just recently at my training camp event where Sean came, Dabo, we had Kevin O'Connell, Mac Brown, we had all these different coaches come. It was a really cool day of coaching, sharing their hearts, their soul. Jim Rome came, Jay Glazer, it was pretty awesome, talking about mental health. And Sean shared at that event how when they won the Super Bowl, it wasn't like this huge fulfilling moment like so many people say when they win it. Like, it wasn't like the greatest moment of his life. The birth of his son was a huge impact in his life. And then next year, I think they only won like 5 games. So he was obviously in darkness that year. And there was a lot of talks that he was going to go to the media and get out of the game. And we were having conversations a lot during that time. And all I can say is Sean is one of the greatest human beings I have ever met. So real, so genuine. At this training camp event, he spoke, then he interviewed Kevin O'Connell. They had an interview together, which was fun watching him interview Kevin, and they had some really cool conversations in their competition against each other now. And then Sean also interviewed Jim Rome and put Jim Rome on the hot seat. And Jim talked about the Jim Everett thing for the first time publicly and shared actually what happened behind the scenes. So I'm going to share that clip at some point on my social media and share actually what happened. So that was pretty epic. But going back to Sean, one of the greatest human beings, and he decided to stay and coach for the right reasons, to take on the challenge, to build a team once again and
does
build
he think,
it back up.
Does he think they lost their way and he lost his way post-Super Bowl?
Sean says it, and he says it publicly.
Based on what? Like what happened?
He said he just lost his way, lost his focus, got caught up in the wins, got caught up in the success they were having, and didn't want to be defined by losses. Hated to lose so much. Here's a little secret for every coach out there that they experience. The wins become less and less enjoyable, and the winning becomes just a relief. That you're actually just experiencing a relief that, thank God, I don't have to deal with the fans yelling
right,
at me.
Right.
Talk shows talking about me, people hating on me. Thank God I don't have to deal with that. So it's actually a relief when they win. All right, here's a little inside scoop that I can share because this is a really powerful story. I'm on a text thread with Lane Kiffin and Dabo Sweeney. And Lane is talking about the fact that winning is like, you know, relief. And Dabo basically starts coaching him up in this text and just says, hey, man, just remember. He's like, we get to do this. This is an incredible thing, an incredible opportunity. He goes, one day, the greatest moment of our life will be 85 years old and we'll be playing shuffleboard at the OK Corral. He goes, so right now, we got this moment to fight the good fight. And so just love it. He said, when the winning pales in comparison to the feeling of that losing, he's like, you're on the wrong track.
I heard it so many coaches, though.
He's like,
I've heard it from so many
coaches. You got to love it. He's like,
The joyfulness of winning is pale in comparison to the misery of losing.
And once that happens, he's like, you're done. You've got to love the battle, love all of it, enjoy it.
You know, one thing you see from Kirby.
It was cool Dabo coaching him up.
One of the things Kirby is, dude, those post-game, like, you know what it takes. First of all, forget about the whole offseason, the 5:30 runs, the nonstop commitment, if you're a Division I player, of all the, the metrics that go into it. And then, you know, I think about Georgia-Florida when Kirby beats Florida all the time, right? That's what he does. The joyful, I don't care if they're 25-point favorites. You see Kirby do the lap around the stadium. You see him get in that locker room, and he's like, we are going to celebrate. I don't care where we were ranked or that Texas is coming up in 3 weeks. Like, have the moment. And football is the all-time to do that because you have 6 days for one goal, right? Everything leads up to that game, which is different, right, in the NBA and baseball. But football, it's a journey to get to that game.
Yep. And again, for every coach, you cannot allow your identity to be tied to the outcome. And so Sean will tell you that he allowed that to happen and then got back into what? Coaching, building up his players, investing in them, the relationships, the journey. All of that is what makes you a great coach.
Yeah, also you got to make hard decisions as a boss. And his decision was Jared Goff may not be good enough to get us a Super Bowl, whether fair or not. You see Jared Goff, you've watched it, right? Basically saying that they just... You know, Sean had a tough call to make. He didn't think he was good enough. Matthew Stafford came in and they won a Super Bowl. You can't argue with what happened, but it also is driven. You watch quarterback.
How much Jared Goff was saying he was only upset with there was no communication. He felt blindsided. And he said, we had such a good relationship. But, I mean, he wasn't being bitter about it. He was just saying, this is what happened. And it's been the greatest thing in my life.
Right.
That
you talk about being
take the pivot, you know, take the pivot.
You talk about being inspired, being told, essentially, you're the reason we got beat by the Patriots. We don't have enough offense. You're the scapegoat. And I probably, Sean, when he said some of that, was I should have communicated with Jared Goff better.
I'm sure. There's no doubt. And Sean and Jared have talked since. And I know that Sean definitely probably feels bad about that and has even explicitly said that in public, but has become a better leader. We're talking about a guy who was 30 years old, thrust into a head coaching job. Millions of people are watching your performance every single week on how you're doing. That is really tough pressure to handle. So to watch him mature and grow, and now he's only 38 years old, 39, and he's a veteran coach in the NFL at 38, 39. It's pretty wild. And he says, John, coaching years are like dog years. Like every year is 7 years. So to watch the kind of leader he is and become, man, I think he's going to go down as the greatest NFL coach.
Give me
wait a minute. He's going to go down as the greatest.
If he stays with it for the next 20 years, I think definitely.
John, can you teach positivity?
You can teach it. Yes, it is a skill that you can learn. You can become more positive. Now, you may not be naturally positive, and believe it or not, I'm not. Grew up in a Jewish-Italian family, so a lot of food, a lot of guilt.
Yeah.
So I know what that's like to actually
be negative.
A lot of complaining, a lot of kvetching. So much complaining. I wrote the no complaining rule. My ancestors wandered around the desert complaining for 40 years.
Yeah.
So I know what it's like to complain. And so, yes, you can become more positive. You can practice it. It's like a muscle, and it will actually make you better. And guess what? Positive thinking is a competitive advantage. It's not wishful thinking. It's productive thinking. It makes you more successful.
Well, Sandra said it earlier, and I don't get too caught up in, you know, listen, if you, once you start following business and leaders, you're going to get 10,000 of them on your Instagram feed, right? But the notion of I don't have to, I get to on virtually everything, like coming in here, I'm tired, or, you know, there's nothing to talk about, or my ratings, or, like, you get to drive in, get in front of a microphone, talk to hundreds of thousands of people. I did it with my daughter, like 12:30, picked up at a party. I'm already in bed. You could say, oh, I have to get out of bed and drag my – or I get 25 minutes in the middle of the night to talk to my daughter one-on-one, and it's changed every way I look at any chore. I get to do this,
and you get to also even drive in traffic in Atlanta, well, where so many can't even drive a car. Right. They don't have the ability, or they don't have a car in other countries.
Listen, Sandra drives in 90 minutes, 2 hours, listening to what? She gets to hear podcasts. She comes in and shares that stuff with us, gets to hear, like, that's great alone time, right? That's great time to figure it out.
It's always your perspective. It's how you see the world.
So you have another one like that? I don't get to, I have to. Is there another one to train our brain?
Yeah, talk to yourself. Don't listen to yourself. The negative thoughts are going to come in, and when they do, talk to yourself. Speak words of life instead of those negative thoughts that are coming at you.
Yeah, I've also heard the best way to make your problems worse is to manifest them. Lie in bed and, like, just get out. The more you think about your problems, the bigger they become.
Yeah, worry is actually, you know, faith in reverse. And so you're worrying about things you can't control. And why would I worry about it?
Worry is like faith in reverse.
Yeah, don't worry about it. Pray about it.
John Gordon's here. We'll do one more segment coming back on Sports Radio 929 The Game. Hey, it's 10:41. My name is Steak. We got a 2-hour show. I hope it's going as fast for our listeners or for John as it is. You know, we've been almost 2 hours now, right?
Yeah, it's going real fast.
It's our own version of a podcast. Like, what's he going to say? Actually, Steak, this has been interminable. This is just...
I love it.
I came in thinking...
I want to come back.
Yeah, I hope so, man. Now we have a reason, right? John Gordon's here. He's got... let's just let folks know, because I'm not prepared. You know what happens? What do they say? Fail to prepare is preparing to fail. Or
well, we've got the Mac Daddy in front of us. What do they say when people are not prepared for this segment?
When you fail to prepare, you prepare to fail.
Okay. There you go.
Which, but again, John is just yapping in my ear. I'm trying to get work done and do my three strikes. So why don't you talk amongst yourselves and finish my three strikes. And then I got a couple questions for John. We'll let our listeners
know. First and foremost, Twitter is blowing up asking me for your social media. So it's at John, J-O-N, Gordon, G-O-R-D-O-N, 11. Okay, at John Gordon 11. All the books and all that stuff is there. I also, the latest book, I was just talking about this stuff for the coaches. I had a coach just text me and say, what is this book? The 7 Commitments of a Great Team. The other part of it, and I guess that's why I asked you, John, about can you teach somebody positivity? Because one of the 7 commitments is consistency in your attitude coming in every day.
Yeah, staying positive through the challenges together. So as a team, you have to say, we are going to stay positive through our adversity, through our challenges, and you make a commitment to that as a team. And each person on the team has to do that because the collective optimism and belief of the team is made above each person, their optimism, their belief. Showing up to Clemson a couple years ago, they were 4-3. This is a team that's used to winning almost every game and maybe losing one game a season. Now they're 4-3 going against Florida State. I show up and there's Dabo Swinney. I'm like, how you doing, man? You doing okay? I think he's going to complain. I think he's going to be frustrated. I think he's going to talk about his quarterback who's playing horrible. And he goes, I love my quarterback.
I love it.
I love our team.
He's the best.
He goes, we're gonna win going forward. He goes, I see us getting better. These guys are learning things that they would not learn otherwise. So these are going to be lessons for life for them. This is his coach. This is that mindset, that perspective. I was blown away. I spoke that night. They won every game since. And it wasn't because of my talk. It was because of Dabo's leadership.
Right. The other thing I always bring up on the air stake is when we talk about playing golf, and specifically men, you guys out there. Well, you'll go play 36 holes, and 35 of them you're in the water, and I hate this game, and I'm going to break my club. And the one hole.
That one great shot that you hit, I call it the one great golf shot phenomenon. This is from the energy bus. So you have that one great shot. That's what you remember. You don't focus on all the bad shots. You always focus on the one great shot, and that makes you want to play again and again. And you get addicted to golf. Well, I always say we have to apply that to life as well. Start writing down. This is great for you and your kids. Do this with your kids. It's a game changer. have them write down their success of the day. So before bed, you go over that success. Not all the failures, not the things that went wrong, but every night they write down their success. They are now going to bed a success.
Ah.
They wake up a success. And now they're looking forward to creating more and more successes. And here's the deal. What you look for, you find. What you focus on shows up more in your life. You do this for 30 days. You do this for your life. And you'll watch your kids focus on success. They're now looking for it. And they will start creating more and more success as a result.
Success of the day. That's a great one for sure. John Gordon is here. Multiple books and teams. And what other ways can they get connected to some of the things that you offer, which also are seminars, workshops around some of these books? Is it just johngordon.com?
Yeah, johngordon.com. And by the way, I got johngordon.com when I ran for city council here back in Atlanta.
I was going to say, dude, how did that? Land that sucker.
1997.
You landed that sucker.
That's great.
Hey, for golf's a great topic too, but I'm also thinking about you. I'm watching some of your speeches about ultra marathoners and, you know, guys that whole notion of pushing yourself beyond the limit, or so much of this stuff is mental. Guy driving in his car who wishes he was in better shape, having a hard time getting to the gym as often as he would like, has those thoughts in his head. I think about the Kobe stuff when someone's like, hey, you give yourself any days off, you know, if you don't feel great in the off season. He said, I don't, it's almost like breathing. Why would I ever give, if I allow my brain to say today's a day you deserve off, then I failed, right? You know, you hear some of that stuff.
Yep.
So what do you say to the guys out there that have struggled with you know, all that stuff when it comes to discipline and you know, wanting to get to a place and they can't find their way there?
So many guys today, so many women, so many people in general, me included, we struggle with our negative thoughts. There are a lot of mental health challenges going on right now in the world. There's a lot of worry, fear, anxiety, and overwhelm. The root for the Greek word of anxious means to separate and divide. So when you're anxious, you feel separate and divided. You feel disconnected. And so the key is, how can I connect more? To have this higher state of mind, this positive mindset. And you could spend more time in meditation. You spend more time in prayer. You spend more time in positive thinking. Why? Because so many negative thoughts are always coming in. What do negative thoughts do? They create clutter. Clutter in our mind lowers our state of mind, and it makes you not want to take action. We got to get rid of that clutter. Clarity, less dots in your head, less clutter, you have more focus, more positive energy, more passion, more power. And so the key here is this. You're not the thoughts that you think. You're the thoughts you believe. I shared this with the University of Texas football team. You're not the thoughts that you think. You're the thoughts you believe. So don't believe the lies those negative thoughts tell. What you got to do is speak words of life, words of encouragement, and you got to talk to yourself, just as you see that player talking to themselves during a game. So don't let those negative thoughts in your head win. You defeat those negative thoughts with more positive, powerful thoughts. Now, at first, it may sound fake. It may sound corny to yourself, like, I'm good enough, I'm smart enough. No, it's like, no, man, I belong here. I deserve to be here right now. This is a great opportunity. I'm going to get to do this. I'm not going to have to do this. I'm gonna love this moment and love this battle. I'm not going to worry about what people think. You talk to yourself in that way. And as you do, you move to a higher state of mind. And as you're in that higher state, you're above those negative thoughts and you operate from a higher plane. This is from my book, The One Truth. And I'm not trying to be promotional. You read this book, The One Truth. I'm telling you, it will take you to a higher state of mind. I wrote it for that and I want to help others.
The notion of getting to the gym, taking the walk after dinner, doing the things when you feel lazy. Is there one trick to be less lazy, more disciplined?
Why are you not being disciplined is the question. Why are you not being consistent? That's the other question. And it all follows to this. Everyone yells, you got to be disciplined. It's not discipline. It's devotion. When you're devoted, it drives your discipline. So what is your bigger purpose? What is your bigger why that will cause you to actually take action and have discipline every day? You are devoted, Stake, to this work, to this craft, to this profession, and it's why you're disciplined every day. Discipline is easy for you because you love it. No one had to make Tom Brady practice throwing the ball or Steph Curry work on his shot. It's the devotion to it that drives your discipline. So let's not worry about the discipline. Let's worry about your state of mind and get you into a higher state of purpose, of passion, of joy, of love, and what you get to do. And that higher state will lead to more discipline and consistency. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think so. Like, what are we trying to accomplish? You don't think about, you know, like, I need to be more of this. It's This is where we're trying to go.
Yeah. I want to be here for my grandkids, so I'm going to work out every day.
Right.
I want to be the best version of myself. Why do we always get fit after the girlfriend leaves or the wife leaves?
Because we love revenge. We are sad, sad humans. Right. I want him to see me when I'm cute and skinny.
Hey, here's our...
be motivated by something greater and bigger.
Bigger than that. Hey, our three strikes question. Best movie or TV show about business? Best movie or TV show about business or a business? The one thing you remember... from a coach, teacher, or mentor, the one saying, we've had a bunch of them we're kicking around today, and your favorite, John, 404-726-0929. 404-726-0929. Best movie or TV show about business or your favorite, one thing you remember a coach, teacher, or mentor telling you, or your dad, whatever it is, one of those that sits in your head. Your mom has a bunch of them, right?
Oh, my goodness gracious.
What's your favorite one from your mom?
Take the high road. There's less traffic up there.
And the
Joellen.
Favorite, John, 404-726-0929. Making you work a little bit. So do you have a company or a business or some culture that you've watched from afar or thought about or seen a movie about and said, like, that's what we're kind of talking about and aspiring?
Everyone talks about Chick-fil-A and their culture. But one you may not know of is Insight Global, which also has a great Atlanta presence. Insight Global, when you walk into their offices around the country, they line up, they greet you, they meet you, they bring off like this incredible positive energy, make you feel welcomed. Pretty special place.
What do you tell teams in terms of walking in their buildings? What are some of the signs of like that they're starting this organization from the, you know, you always say the first person you see sets the entire tone, right?
You feel the energy of each person in the building. So what kind of energy are they sharing? What words are written on the walls? And are they living those
words on
the
walls? Do you remember some of those words and some of those teams or not?
Oh, of course. But
so give me were they behind the scenes you can't say?
No, the Rams' competitive greatness. I'm excited for the Jaguars, their new values and slogans and what they're sharing. I can't really share. You'll be seeing them, but I've actually worked with the coach on them, and they're really exciting to present, and you're going to see the power that comes from those words and that mission. Clemson football, best is the standard. Dabo really built his program around that. That was actually 2011 when he created that.
Okay. 404-726-0929. And you rolling through Atlanta, doing a speaking engagement over the next
tomorrow.
Couple of days.
Yep.
And hopefully we'll get to see you again. Now that you're here, you know, we don't do nothing over the phone. We don't do anything short. Lived, right? So now more motivation to be here.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
And I got to come back.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, well, Midtown is unbelievable. This location's
hopping,
great.
Right?
Yeah, I'm bringing the family back.
Dude, how nice is Colony Square now? Do you remember what this was like, Colony Square?
It is like the restaurants here, that food court, unbelievable. Walking to Piedmont Park this morning, it was awesome.
You got to get on the Beltline. Have you been on the Beltline?
No.
Okay.
Oh,
dude,
so good.
The Beltline has changed this entire city. Walking, running, biking, energy, you know, a whole different – young people, they think differently of too. This whole sober curious thing too, which is a totally different mindset from what was going on in Buckhead back in the day, right? They figure some things out. Have you seen a lot of that of late?
Well, younger people are drinking less and going to bars less.
Yeah.
So we would not have done as well back in the day.
No, running clubs and, you know, a spiritual thing about how they look at things and, you know – not like sitting at Park Bench, the place that he ran for. You know, that place ever closed, what, like 4 a.m. you were there? Till?
Oh, yeah, 4 a.m.
4 a.m.
Now the kids are being much more productive, which is good.
Yes, they are. All right, let's get Greg in Vinings. Greg, best movie or TV show about business?
Yeah, I thought The Big Short was a great adaptation for 2008.
Love that
what
movie.
Happened.
Love that movie. Based on the same guy that wrote Moneyball. One thing you remember from a coach, teacher, or mentor?
Yeah, don't sweat the small stuff, and it's all small stuff.
And favorite, John?
One of the best books ever written by John Wooden, They Call Me Coach.
Good stuff, buddy.
Love it.
Thank you. Hey, Chris in College Park, best movie or TV show about business?
I loved it as a kid, and it still holds true, 9 to 5.
Good stuff. One thing you remember from a coach, teacher, or mentor?
Winners never quit. Quitters never win.
And favorite, John?
One of the greatest actors ever, John Goodman. Thanks, Dake. And happy belated birthday.
Thank you so much. I just saw Goodman in Big Lebowski recently. Dude,
so funny.
You talk about a performance. Yeah. That was so freaking good. Hey, let's get Skip in Atlanta. Hey, Skip, what's your favorite movie or TV show about business?
What's going on, God Parents? How y'all doing?
Always good, buddy.
My favorite show, go ahead. Favorite show, I think I like business, The Accountant 1 and 2.
Oh, The Accountant. Yeah, just came out. Affleck's second one. One thing you remember from a coach or mentor or teacher?
You never know unless you try it.
And favorite, John.
John Smoltz.
Oh, that's a good one. Smoltzy. Thanks, buddy. There you go. That was our three strikes.
Was the accountant about business, though?
Or was it about? I think so. Now, I would say Wall Street's about as good as it gets. Now, you may not appreciate the values there, but that's a great film.
That movie was unbelievable.
Unbelievable, right?
Oh, yeah.
Wall Street 2, not bad either. All right, so johngordon.com, great place to find you. New book is The 7 Commitments of a Great Team. Sandy, thanks for getting John in here.
Mike, John, thank you. Never would have done.
Sandra's the only one to get these people to come see us, right?
She's awesome. This is like 3-4 years now that we've been talking about it.
I know.
And today we finally made it happen. But seeing Steak again was definitely a treat.
And folks are really, really loving it, John. We can't thank you enough, really. Folks have really, really enjoyed this.
Best to you and your family. Continued success. We'll see you soon. Thanks for making the Steakhouse part of your day. Bye.